This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about healthcare and money and the financial pressures that shape our care. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. On a hot summer day in 2019, word got out that one of Philadelphia's big hospitals, Hahnemann, was closing its doors for good. It had served some of the city's poorest patients for well over 150 years. Patients, doctors, nurses, and other hospital employees flooded the streets, demanding the hospital stay open. A year and a half before, the hospital had been sold to a for-profit company, and many blamed the closure on corporate greed. The closing made national headlines. Senator and then presidential candidate Bernie Sanders even joined the protests.
We believe that healthcare is a human right, and we're going to fight for a system that is based on human needs, not corporate profits.
Closing Hahnemann in Philadelphia was a financial decision. There was no shortage of patients relying on that hospital. Lots of them were left hanging, especially women who were pregnant and had planned to deliver their babies there. The city had already seen a string of other hospital and maternity ward closures that started in the late 90s. So there was concern about what this would mean for maternity care. Reporters Nina Feldman and Alan Yu spent a couple of months looking into the impact of these closures on health outcomes for infants, and they found some surprising insights.
It was 2009, and Julie Crystal was hanging on by a thread. She'd been a midwife for 20 years, and she'd never seen so many patients coming into the labor and delivery unit as she had recently.
What midwives like to do is support women in labor and, you know, do back rubs and really pay a lot of close attention to people as they're going through the process of having their baby. And all of a sudden, we couldn't do that so much anymore because we were just running from room to room, you know, making sure that the baby wasn't about to come out. And so we just were taking care of a lot more people at once.
It was more than just not being able to give back rubs. There weren't enough rooms. Women were delivering on stretchers in the hallway. It felt like things were on the verge of collapse.
It was stressful. It was scary. And so then the experience that women were having was just crappier because the staff was so stressed.
The onslaught of patients wasn't part of some sudden baby boom. The hospital where Julie worked at the time was one of a few that still delivered babies in Philadelphia. 13 maternity wards had closed over the course of the last decade. And so the ones that stayed open were feeling the heat.
And that's what I really remember is like, oh my gosh, things are relatively safe, but it's because we're killing ourselves here to keep it that way.
This pace didn't feel sustainable, and the closures didn't make sense. There were plenty of patients who needed care. So what happened to all the other maternity wards? Why did they all shut down?
There is certainly no shortage of patients. But despite the demand, delivering babies is a money-losing business. That's true for a few reasons. First, insurance reimbursement rates for women's healthcare is just less than it is for other procedures. Here's Arnold Cohen, an obstetrician and gynecologist. He ran the maternity ward at Einstein Medical Center, one of the six hospitals that stayed open.
For obstetrical care, we provide essentially 9 months worth of care and get reimbursed less than, let's say, somebody gets for a colonoscopy sometimes.
Those rates are even lower when public health insurance is paying the bill. That's why hospitals are always trying to get enough patients on private insurance to subsidize the ones on Medicaid and Medicare. People in the healthcare business call that a good payer mix. Hospitals with a lot of patients on Medicaid spend more on each delivery than they get back.
The average loss per delivery was about $2,000 per delivery, and that made it economically unsound for many hospitals to provide obstetrical services.
Then there's the other part of the equation, the cost. Delivering babies is expensive, and it might not be for the reasons you would think. It's not any special equipment or medication you need to have on hand. It's the cost of risk. Liability insurance for doctors, especially ones delivering babies, is expensive. During the big wave of maternity ward closures, Owen Montgomery was head of OBGYN at Hahnemann Hospital, another of the remaining six.
For each of my faculty members, it was $160,000 a year to provide liability insurance. I paid more per year for liability protection for each faculty than I paid each faculty in salary.
In the early 2000s, medical malpractice insurance rates went up drastically in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia was even more expensive. If a jury found a doctor negligent in a delivery, the payouts were just enormous. So the hospitals had to have a lot of money in the bank in case that happened. High malpractice rates and low reimbursements led a lot of hospitals in Philadelphia to do the math and make a rational business decision. That with the high costs and low revenue, it did not make sense to keep delivering babies. And so maternity wards closed across the city, one after the other.
With each closure, new patients flooded the remaining wards. People had to wait for rooms. They gave birth in triage rooms or even hallways. As Julie Crystal, the midwife, rushed from one person to the next, she was really worried about the kind of care she could provide.
We have to make a lot of quick decisions. So we have a lot of little boxes in our heads, which are diagnoses. And if someone says, I have pain when I pee and there's blood in my pee, you know, bing, urinary tract infection like lights up in my brain in a little box. But if someone comes in and they have a whole collection of weird symptoms that don't light up any of my little diagnostic boxes, then my tendency, unless I work really hard, is to say, oh, you know, that doesn't make any sense, so you must be crazy. You know, you're not fitting my box, so something's wrong with you. Rather than, oh, I need to maybe look for another box, or maybe it's a combination of two boxes.
Julie worried that if her colleagues were taking too many of these shortcuts, the patients would suffer. And research shows that when healthcare providers don't have enough time to spend with each patient, it can lead to complications. In the first few years after most of the maternity wards closed, care did get worse. Things were looking bad. After steadily declining for years, the rate of infant mortality in Philly started to creep up as hospital maternity wards closed. In the first few years after the surge of closing wards, the chances of a newborn dying went up by 50% compared to counties that didn't have so many closures. Julie was worried. She saw a crisis coming and was concerned that more maternity units could close as a result. Could hers be next? There was one major factor preventing that from happening. Julie worked at a teaching hospital. In fact, all the remaining maternity wards were part of teaching hospitals. That meant they had medical residents to help deliver the babies, and their salaries were paid for in part by the federal government. It also meant they had a reason to stay open outside of breaking even, teaching people how to deliver babies. Here's OBGYN Owen Montgomery again.
The basic equation was, if you were committed to education, if you're educating the next generation of healthcare providers, then the university or the medical school was willing to lose money providing obstetrical care.
Still, even these big university-backed medical centers were starting to buckle under the pressure. So the remaining hospitals did something they'd never done before. They worked as a team. Cooperation may sound like it was a natural solution, but it's actually rare. Usually hospitals compete with each other. Remember that payer mix? If a hospital administrator were purely thinking about finances and nothing else, they would want as few patients on Medicaid or Medicare as possible. Just don't bring in the same revenue. Jack Ludmere was Julie's boss. He was one of the heads of obstetrics at the time.
Now, I don't want to mention any names in particular. There were some hospitals that decided, you know, I don't want to bring vulnerable patients from this area of the city.
But in this new situation, they couldn't afford to think about what type of insurance a patient had. The main concern was space. If one maternity ward was overwhelmed, things could get even worse. Doctors might make more mistakes. Outcomes could decline, and the ward might close. That would risk further overwhelming the whole system. So The heads of each department made a sort of pact that they would support each other and at times work outside their financial interests to prevent anyone from closing.
We were able to sit together no longer on a spirit of competition, but on a spirit of collaboration.
The directors started sharing strategies for how to manage high-risk pregnancies, which many of the hospitals hadn't really had to deal with so much before. They kept tabs on how many patients there were at each hospital and transferred people if one unit was running out of space. Often, that meant giving up patients who they would have wanted to care for otherwise. They would have brought in revenue. Some hospitals expanded to make more room. They all started using a new, more efficient staffing model where one person rotated onto the labor and delivery floor at all times instead of assigning each patient her own doctor who had to be on call all the time.
And it worked. The chances of infants dying went back down to where it was before the wave of closures. Here's Arnold Cohen again.
And if you were to ask me, do I think it was a good thing that these obstetrical units closed or a bad thing, I would tell you that it was a good thing.
It may sound counterintuitive, but yes, by some measures, the remaining hospitals ended up with better service as a result of the crucible of the closing maternity wards. The hospital leaders say this is because the ones that closed were generally smaller hospitals, serving the communities directly surrounding them. While that might have been convenient, many of those hospitals were not as up-to-date on the latest research or best practices, whereas the teaching hospitals had to keep up with the newest evidence. Plus, the remaining hospitals just had more experience. Yes, they had to take on more births, but that also meant they had more chances to get better. And last, the smaller hospitals did not have the infrastructure to deal with high-risk pregnancies in case something really bad happened. The teaching hospitals are part of large hospital systems with other kinds of specialty care. Asta Mater is an OBGYN with the City of Philadelphia who reviews maternal health outcomes across the city.
Hemorrhage deaths, which is what we see more often internationally and is a sort of third leading cause of death nationally as well, is almost minimal in Philadelphia. And, you know, I do think that that's because of the fact that the remaining delivery hospitals all are well equipped to manage these kinds of high risk conditions.
That's not to say things were perfect in Philadelphia. The hospitals that had closed served people in their direct neighborhood. Sometimes people could even walk there. When they closed, those patients would have to call an ambulance or a taxi or get a ride when it came time to deliver. It might have been inconvenient or expensive, though generally they got there to give birth. But people need more than just a place to have their babies. There are 9 months of pregnancy that bring huge health changes, especially if someone has other health risks. It's really important for doctors to know early in the pregnancy when people have chronic conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure so they can get them on the right medications. When many of the neighborhood hospitals disappeared, so did the prenatal care they provided. The percentage of births where the pregnant people received no prenatal care has climbed in Philly since 2000. Still, the alliance held, warding off the worst. The disaster everyone had been waiting for just never happened. Not for a decade, not until the summer of 2019.
In the summer of 2019, Shawn Mattson was just finishing up her OBGYN residency at Hahnemann Hospital, one of the remaining maternity wards. The hospital had been operating right downtown Philadelphia since before the Civil War. Since the 90s, it had been bought and sold by a handful of operators. Its latest one was a California investment banker who ran the hospital for profit. Hahnemann treated some of the city's poorest, sickest patients, and that's who came into the labor and delivery floor, too. It made for a fast-paced, intense environment where the staff all had to work as a team. It was like being in the trenches, Sean said. They were used to doing more with less.
Where you might not have like the gooseneck lamp that you need to like really truly do a speculum exam, so you have like a headlamp on your head kind of thing. Like you're doing cave diving or whatever, kind of like MacGyvering some sort of situation to make it work.
She says they were often short-staffed and things were less than perfect.
The stretcher, maybe that's broken. You know, things sort of to that extent, paint peeling off the wall.
But by that summer, the usual supply shortages seemed more dire.
No linens in the OR. Things were just not always readily available, just like basic supplies.
Even with the writing on the wall, Sean and her colleagues couldn't believe the hospital would close. Too many people depended on it. Owen, the chair of Sean's department, actually reassured them that their jobs would be safe. The city couldn't let this happen. But then it did.
We begin at 4 o'clock with a plan to close Hahnemann at the end of this summer.
And Hahnemann University continued to eliminate services today by closing its emergency department.
Hahnemann's owner says the business can't continue to sustain millions of dollars in losses every month. Temple
University. The hospital's owner, Joel Friedman, said he tried his best to keep Hahnemann open, but there was simply no saving it. It collapsed under its own costs. And he's a private business owner. He didn't have to ask anyone's permission to cut his losses and walk away. In June of 2019, Friedman declared bankruptcy. The closure sparked an outcry across the city. Sean took to the streets to protest. Where would her patients go? 800 pregnant patients who now had to find someplace else to deliver. Sean was joined by Lanice Coleman, the head midwife at Hahnemann. The ground felt shaky beneath them.
Things happened very quickly. Felt very unsafe to many of us, not just healthcare providers, but patients also.
It felt like all the trust she had worked to build with her patients over the years had just evaporated into thin air.
People had generations of families have their babies at Hahnemann Hospital. It's what you know, it's a tradition in your family.
There was so much to figure out.
Do we have access to a person's records? You know, they're very important information in prenatal records that can have impact plans for delivery and postpartum care, and to have to scramble at the very last minute and figure out how to make that system work felt very unsafe.
Eventually, another hospital hired Sean and Lanice and Owen and most of Hahnemann's labor and delivery staff and started building out all the systems that Hahnemann had developed for high-risk pregnancies. They beefed up their interpretation services to communicate with the influx of immigrant patients. They trained their staff to anticipate different cultural expectations around giving birth.
A lot of our Southeast Asian patients, you know, temperature is very important. So, you know, when you're laboring and someone asks you for a glass of water, I typically know they're going to want a glass of warm water, whereas most people would assume you would want a glass of cold water.
But Sean and Lanice say it's still common for people to show up without medical records, having gotten prenatal care somewhere else, or not at all. And Sean says her patients still bring up Hahnemann unprompted all the time. Now, 2 years later.
There was one woman I remember a couple months ago, and she basically started crying in my office at just talking about how, you know, she's like, had her kidney doctor there, her heart doctor, she had all her babies there, her grandkids were born there, and it was like the loss of something really significant in her life.
The number of delivery hospitals in Philadelphia, a city where around 50 people give birth each day, is now down to 5. The pact between hospitals had lost one member. So was that the tipping point? Would the system be able to absorb the hundreds of births performed at Hahnemann each year?
In some ways, the remaining 5 were prepared for another closure because they'd handled it before. The infrastructure was there. But on the other hand, it was still a shock. And it's unclear how much more the system can bend before it breaks. Think about timing. Hahnemann closed just before the pandemic hit, changing the way everyone got their healthcare. So it's hard to measure the impact of Hahnemann's closure alone, because the pandemic changed so much about delivery patterns. But if the pandemic has taught us anything about the business of healthcare, it's that hospitals are vulnerable to financial pressures. Across the country, sales and closures loom. In Philadelphia, 2 of the giant teaching hospitals that remain are about to merge. Those involved say it's unlikely a maternity ward will be lost in the process, but it has happened before. Until now, the city has managed to keep babies safe as a result of goodwill, from a handful of people who liked each other well enough to work together, like Owen and Arnold and Jack. dedicated leaders who put aside their normal business interests for the good of the city. But should something as important as delivering babies run on goodwill alone? Owen Montgomery says it doesn't have to.
The state has to decide, or the federal government has to decide, that the care of, you know, women delivering the babies that have turned into the citizens of our, you know, the next citizens of the of our country, that their care is worth providing at a level which allows the care providers to stay in business. So, you know, some of it's just dollars and cents.
As it stands, it's left up to the individual hospitals. And at any minute, they could change their mind.
That story was reported by Alan Yu and Nina Feldman as part of the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism's 2020 Data Fellowship.